Psalm 26, I want to focus on verse 3. For your grace is before my eyes, I have walked in your truth. Now, the idea is that he's walking, and he's walking in the truth, in God's truth, because he's looking at God's grace. He's not so much carefully looking at the path of his feet, that is, I admit, another sort of metaphor that's used in the Psalms. But here the idea is, I'm looking at something else, and my feet are therefore going to be in God's truth. So the idea is also in Psalm 25, verse 15, my eyes are ever on Yahweh, for he will pluck my feet out of the net. So he knows that there's snares for him, and he's not with his eyes to the ground, being careful he doesn't step into a trap. He's instead looking at God. And therefore, he's going to walk somehow safely, and he's not going to step on the trap. So the metaphor suggests, as I say, that he's not so carefully looking down as to how should I walk in your truth, but instead he's looking up. Psalm 25:15 says, my eyes are ever on Yahweh. Verse 3 of our Psalm 26 says, your grace is ever before my eyes. So God is grace. When he reveals himself to Moses and he gives the characteristics of his name, his personality, his character, his grace to save is the first leading prime characteristic. So by focusing upon him, God, and that grace, we walk in truth, and we don't, as Psalm 25 says, put our foot on the trap and fall into the net. Well, this is somewhat different to the way that I was certainly brought up, and the way of, I think, a lot of small-time denominationalism, where the emphasis is very much on get your theology straight, and that will see you right. And yet, that's just not true to observed experience. People can have their theology straight and consider that walking in the truth is to maintain that purity of understanding of theology, and that's all it is. You know, here's a statement of faith, son, you've just been baptized, just hold on to this, son, and you won't go too far wrong. Well, people do go far wrong. They may believe the right things, and yet they step into traps. Now, at the time, David is on the run from Saul, and Saul is trying to trap him. He's trying to trap him through marriages to his daughters, trying to trap him by kidding him that actually all his courtiers are on David's side, who keep telling him that, oh, Saul really loves you. All sorts of traps. Go and kill 100 Philistines. Go and fight the Philistines at this dangerous point, because the idea is that Saul wants to get David killed. That's the idea. So poor David had all these traps. And yet, instead of carefully trying to do his footwork, he is saying, look, I'm just looking at your grace. I'm looking at Yahweh. I'm looking at God. Now, as I say, the emphasis in the way of religion is the other way around. Make sure you've got your truth right, and then you'll be good. And that is not the emphasis here. I think that relationship with God leads you intuitively to the right understandings. I think, for example, if you focus upon God's grace, then you will, I think, naturally come to understand that, in fact, eternal hellfire torment is simply not what a God of all grace is going to practice upon those who sin against him. And you will perceive then that the wages of sin is death, and that that is a sentence that is self-chosen and not, as it were, eternal torture by God forever and ever for the wicked. It is not going to be the way that a God of all grace is going to behave. And yet grace and truth, when put together, are at times a reference to the covenant to Abraham. And the covenant to Abraham was a one-sided offer by God by pure grace, that you as Abraham's seed will inherit the earth forever, that you will live forever in my kingdom on earth. That's it. Believe it. That's it. Sure, there was the sign of circumcision for males, but that was not of itself required in order to have that hope of God's kingdom of itself. It was not of works, lest any man should boast. That was an external, as it were, sign for males. You can say that you must be circumcised in order to be in the covenant, because that would mean that women couldn't be in the covenant. They couldn't have the hope of the kingdom. So it was an external sign. Beyond that, I see no further evidence that the covenant with Abraham was based on anything apart from God's grace. I mean, when God cuts the covenant with Abraham in Genesis 15, Abraham is actually asleep. He is unable to do anything. And God makes the covenant, and usually in a covenant there are various contractual sort of responsibilities on both sides. And yet Abraham is not asked for anything at that point. God simply makes these promises. When God first appeared to Abraham, he was told to go and inherit the kingdom. Basically, that's what God told him. Go on a journey, inherit the kingdom. I offer it to you. And Abraham, admittedly in a very faltering way, says yes to that. And that, in the end, is the response. All you got to do is say yes. Now, of course, if you have got the sure, definite hope of eternity in God's kingdom before you, you are going to live in a way of grace, and your lifestyle is going to reflect that. My point is, focus upon the awesome, absolutely amazing grace that God is offering you in his promise of his kingdom to you. Focus upon that, and you will get your footwork right. All your decisions and life is, in a sense, a stream of choices, inviting us to make decisions. All those decisions, all those choices will somehow work out right. If you are living in the guiding light of God's grace, if you're not being so careful to avoid sin by your own steel will, but if you're focused upon his grace, somehow you will walk in truth and you will not put your foot in the trap that is going to destroy you.